This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
For the latest in movie news and box office reports, welcome to the Cinema Recap Podcast. And now for your hosts, your friends and mine, John Bonham and Mark Jadson.
All right, and welcome back to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap. I've got your host, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jadson, as always. Mark, it's been a long time, man.
It's been a long time. It's been a little too long. A combination of a lot of things. Some faulty technology, unfortunately, on my end. Working off of a new setup right now, so I think it's already coming in, hopefully more clear, fingers crossed. And yeah, I mean, I feel like everywhere has gotten some type of bad weather, so that's played a huge part into it. And, I'll be flat honest, some of the movies that are out right now, it's kind of tough to get into. I know we kind of both do this. I have this as a job in some way, shape, or form, but we've got other competing priorities too. So, unfortunately, the January slate has not been too compelling, at least from my standpoint.
Yeah, you know what? There's only one movie that I was really drawn to, which we can touch on a little bit later, and even that wound up being pretty disappointing.
Right.
I was thinking back to January last year. I remember being really excited, only to be pretty let down after Hostiles, 12 Strong, and Den of Thieves were all kind of busts for me. So back-to-back, pretty slow starts to the year, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not surprising. I mean, they named this January and February, don't be weird for a reason. But every now and then you'll get some gems or at least some things that, are pretty surprising. I actually didn't mind Den of Thieves, but, still this month is not a month a lot of people really remember very fondly this period until maybe like that Valentine's Day period where you get sometimes like a John Wick or, you'll get obviously Black Panther last year or maybe some other things that surprise, like Get Out. So hopefully, we get some gems this February. I know the next time we'll probably do this, we'll do like a little bit of a February preview. But that's what I'm hoping for, at least.
Yeah, I hear you. I did a what to watch for February that I sent over to David yesterday. So hopefully that'll be posted on thatmomentin.com here shortly. But there were quite a few things to touch on. So I'd like to think I'll at least make it to a few of them that kind of piqued my interest.
I like it.
But yeah, without further ado, we'll go ahead and dive into some real news here today.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
So, Mark, I know you kind of were catching me up on all the news. I didn't have a whole lot of input, but I think the biggest thing that you mentioned to me was Christopher Nolan's officially announced his new film coming out in 2020.
Yep. And I think he's going to be working again with Warner Brothers. If I've got that fact wrong, my apologies. But, there's not really a whole bunch to go off of as far as plot synopsis, plot summary, or even who's going to be starring in it for the most part. He's slated to release something in 2020.
All right, and I'm sure he'll keep things pretty well under wraps until we'll get, a little bit of a, maybe a slight premise, a few casting nods, and then we'll probably get a teaser trailer that doesn't reveal a whole lot. But I like the way he goes about things, and I like going into his movies, relatively blind sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I don't love all of his movies, but I do like that he still keeps the mystery up in a lot of things. I respect that a lot, and even his trailers are very restrained and very pulled back, and I've, been on record a couple times. I feel a lot of trailers do it wrong, so I like the way he does it, and whether you kind of love him or you kind of aren't as high on him, anytime if one of his movies come out, it is an event. And I think he's like one of a few directors who's like, he is the star of the movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah, 100%. I think he's got I think him and Tarantino are similar. Yep. In that respect. But I think back to Interstellar, it wasn't my favorite Nolan movie by any stretch, but Man, the first teaser trailer that released for that was almost perfect, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that one at all.
I do. It was like the sound was swelling, and it wasn't a whole bunch. I think if I recall correctly, you see something kind of going up in the space, and you see them panning to, like, different, you know, cast members. But that's all we needed. And I don't recall if they probably did release another one, but I don't remember much of that because I just remember the first trailer, and, like, I was sold. That's all I needed to see.
Yeah, I know. You had, you know, Matthew McConaughey driving away from, you know, his family, and he's tearing up. It was, you know, they slipped some emotion in there. Yep. I thought it was just really, really well done.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So, yeah, be excited to see what else, you know, what further news comes out about that in the next, well, gee, might not be quite a few months until we get any more detail, but we'll certainly keep everybody updated.
Absolutely.
So the next thing you gave me was some RoboCop news.
Yeah, so apparently this is semi-old news. I think it came out, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago, but I was reading around and, you know, one of the sites I frequent, you know, they got with director Neil Blomkamp, and he's been tagged to direct this RoboCop sequel. Obviously, there's been a lot of RoboCop sequels, but the crazy thing about this one is they're going to take a Halloween-like approach, and they're going to, you know, wipe everything that happened after that first movie. So this is going to be a direct movie to that 1987 Paul Vero even, you know, movie that really, you know, hit on a lot of things, violence and the news and identity, etc. So I like a lot of Neil Blomkamp's movies, so I'm excited to see where this goes, you know, just and see who's cast. I don't know about you, John.
I think the feel of his movies have a very, you know, almost like RoboCop type touch to them. So I think it's kind of a natural transition for him to take over here. I mean, to be honest, I haven't seen District 9. I've seen bits and pieces of Elysium and Chappie. But from what I did see, I mean, it almost felt like I was, you know, borderline watching a RoboCop movie. So I'm excited. I think it should probably be a pretty good fit for him as a director.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of funny. I've never really attributed, like, that RoboCop style to Blomkamp. But now when I think about it, there are definitely elements in that movie. I say the happiest thing I'm happy about in regards to this news is, you know, if he's directing RoboCop, it's not original IP, but at the same time, every one of his last three movies has taken place in South Africa. I think it'd do the man good if he did something that wasn't in South Africa.
Yeah, mix things up a little bit.
Yeah, well, and let me backtrack, you know, Elysium didn't take place in South Africa, but, you know, they all have Charlton Copley. I imagine he'll probably play a role in this movie in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, two out of his three movies take place in South Africa. I don't think it's a bad thing if he kind of gets away from that, you know, vibe and maybe takes it into another location, whether that is Detroit or whether that's maybe, you know, something else in another setting for RoboCop.
Yeah. Was who played the original RoboCop? Was it like Peter Weller?
Yep, that was Peter Weller. Yep.
Okay. Are we expecting him to be coming back to do the voice? Or?
I don't know. I mean, I know he's still alive, and I know that he'll still do a few things here and there. My gut says he probably won't. Maybe he'll have some type of cameo or something that, you know, is like a supporting. But I can't see him doing the voice. I imagine they're going to have to get that casting right for sure. He was one of the main reasons that movie worked so well, in my opinion, because he sold so much from, you know, just his visor and just his mouth. But
right.
And then the RoboCop sequel, I don't think it's a bad – well, the RoboCop 2014 remake, I don't think it's a bad movie. But I do think that the casting, Joel Kinnaman, he was kind of a RoboCop. So I do think they've got to take some time to get this one right.
Man, they might as well just cast Tom Hardy. He's pretty much got his face covered in every movie.
So. Yeah, it's a good one.
Might just be a natural fit for him.
Right.
All right, let's see what else we got here. Started to get quite a few stills released from Hobbs and Shaw. I've been keeping up to date with those on The Rock's Instagram. But the one in particular you and I talked about was one of him and Roman Reigns. Looks like they're going to be playing brothers in that movie.
Yep. They're real-life cousins. So
that's right.
The bond is there. I think even the biggest news that's, you know, not necessarily connected to the movie is, you know, Roman Reigns, for the most part, looks pretty good. I don't know how many wrestling fans there are here or people who follow the news, but, you know, he had to step away from the ring to fight leukemia, and he's still fighting by all intents and purposes. But I got to take this as good news that he is well enough to, you know, do a small bit in a major Hollywood movie.
Yeah, it's certainly a good sign. So, you know, power to him for getting back involved. And I think he's picking quite a movie to get in on. So
yeah,
good for him.
Exactly.
But, yeah, it looks like you're going to be doing quite a big sequence there with kind of like The Rock and his, you know, Samoan family, or I guess Hobbs's Samoan family, if you will. So kind of curious to see how they go about that.
Sure. Yeah, I'm all for originality in this movie, you know, in this franchise. So I think they've got an opportunity to do some unforeseen things in this Hobbs and Shaw spinoff.
Yeah, I think it should be a lot of fun and a ton of action, I'm guessing.
Yep.
And, well, last but not least is, well, actually, I guess we got two more things. One other thing just came to mind, but the New Mutants, I think you said we probably saw the first trailer for it back in 2017. It was kind of like a weird, dark X-Men spinoff of sorts, right?
Yeah, it was, marketed as obviously in the X-Men universe, but they were going to go with like a pretty heavy horror slant. And I think that's what kind of drew people to the movie a lot, because we're going to see some similar things. It was going to be connected, but it was definitely going to have more of a horror, frightening, type of feel. But since that 2017, and since that first trailer came out, there's been a lot of turmoil with, is Fox going to keep on doing this? Or are they not doing this? And I think there's just been a lot of internal strife over, like, do we want to paint this as a full-on horror? Do we want to, have horror elements but make it more action, coming of age? So it sounds like there's very much too many cooks in the kitchen. At this point right now, I believe the plan is to release it on Hulu. They've got a date of August 2nd of 2019, but if they release it on Hulu, it's basically just an admission that this movie is no good.
Yeah, it's definitely not a good sign. I think the last movie I can think of that did the pretty drastic transition from the big screen to a streaming service all of a sudden was with the Cloverfield Paradox, which they released like out of the blue after the Super Bowl, and it just, it was terrible and just tanked. I didn't watch it, but it just did not sound like a good movie.
Yeah, it's I imagine it's still there because Netflix has it, but yeah, it's not a good movie.
Did you check it out?
I did. I was one of the many who checked it out. But I was also one of the suckers who checked it out. It draws you in from like the first 15, 20-ish minutes, but then you just realize something is very amiss, and the hook isn't there. And even it's Cloverfield, but it doesn't feel exactly connected until like the end, and then by then it's too late. It's just boring. So I'll just leave it at that.
Oh, yeah, it sounds rough. Well, the last piece of news that I saw today was they did a little teaser for Birds of Prey.
Oh.
If you happen to saw that.
I have not seen it, no.
Oh, yeah, which honestly, I thought that movie wasn't going to get legs after, how poorly Suicide Squad did. I just figured, some of these DC spinoffs were going to, just kind of be put in the closet for a while. But yeah, they did release it. They showed a few characters, obviously the main one being Harley Quinn, with Margot Robbie being back for it. I don't really know too much about it, the storyline at all.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the comic or anything, but I did see that Ewan McGregor is going to be playing the villain in it.
Okay, I'm looking at the cast right now. Black Mask. I don't know much about comics or especially DC, so I don't know what that is. Like, Black Mask sounds like a bad guy, so I'm gonna take your word for it.
That was my guess, at least.
I see a Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I really like her a lot as actress, 10 Cloverfield Lane. So it's cool that she's gonna be in this movie. I guess I would need to see more, obviously, but I figure if there was one piece they would keep from Suicide Squad, it would be Margot Robbie. Even to this day, I feel like I say that like it happened a decade ago, but even to this day,
yeah,
you'll still see people dress up as her. So, there's a lot of legs in that character and her interpretation of it. So I'm not surprised that, they're going to keep that piece and move that forward.
Yeah, I think she was one of two bright spots in Suicide Squad, which was just a bad movie all around.
Oscar-winning movie, but bad movie all around.
It won an Oscar?
Yeah, I won it for, like, best makeup, I want to say. I could be wrong on that. I could do a quick search here. But, yeah, it was one of those things that that won an Oscar. Oh, they won it for, gosh, give me 1 second here. Best achievement in makeup and hairstyling. There you go.
I guess they gave it just based on Margot Robbie then, but
yeah, it was very much a surprise. I forget what was nominated along with it, but it was like, wow, Suicide Squad, Oscar winner, no matter how small a category, this is an Oscar winner.
Yeah, no. Just based on how bad the movie was, it didn't deserve anything. But so yeah, I think that'll wrap up our news for the day, and with that, we'll go ahead and take a quick pause to hear about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
We'll return after these announcements.
Hello! Do you like having your podcast interrupted by promos? Probably not. So we'll keep this brief. My name is Chris.
My name is Mike.
And my name is Justin. And we just wanted to introduce ourselves. We're the Casual Cinecast.
We're a weekly podcast that reviews current movies and TV, as well as the occasional dive into classic cinema with the Criterion Collection.
We cover everything from Black Panther to Black Narcissus.
From Solo to Sallow.
From Love, Simon to Simon of the Desert.
If that sounds good to you, look us up on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. We'll see you there.
You know, or something, because we probably won't actually see you. But
yeah, we don't see them when they listen.
Right, well, okay. Well, back to your podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is JD from the In Session Film Podcast. Each week, we review
the latest from Hollywood, California.
Well, yes, Brendan. We also
give top three lists.
Okay, yeah. Thanks again, Brendan. Additionally, you can hear us
talk other movie news, trailers, varying movie series, or other interesting film-related topics, and even rants and raves of the week.
That's correct, Brendan. On top of our main show, every Friday,
you can also hear our extra film podcasts.
Good job, Brendan.
Thank you, JD. It's my goal to make you proud. You're the father, after all.
Yes, and I'm very proud. You can listen to the In Session Film podcast on
iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or at InSessionFilm.com.
Brendan, will you please let me complete just one?
Nope.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Listen to the In Session Film podcast every Monday and Friday. Subscribe today and hear me verbally beat JD like a Cherokee drum.
No. That's not how this works, sir.
Hey,
no.
Go cry at Midnight Special again, okay? That's what you're good for.
I will. You know what? And I'll do it while pummeling you. I'll do both at the same time.
How are you going to pummel me? Yeah.
I don't buy that. That's just how it works.
All right, and we'll go ahead and get back into things here with a real quick run through of last weekend at the box office.
I never saw The Fly.
You never saw The Fly?
I never saw The Fly.
The Fly was great.
Well, I never saw The Fly.
Did you see The Fly?
Of course I saw The Fly.
I never saw The Fly.
He saw The Fly.
Well, I never saw The Fly.
Everyone saw The Fly.
No, I never saw The Fly.
My parents saw The Fly.
I never saw The Fly.
My children saw The Fly.
Shut up.
I never saw The Fly. My cousin saw The Fly.
Shut up.
I think it actually stayed almost the exact same from the week before. Just like we mentioned, not a whole lot coming out this month. Not a whole lot to get excited about. Quite a few, or I guess a couple of them are still in there from their December release date.
Yep.
But number five was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Did you get a chance to check that one out yet?
I'm still kicking myself. No, I haven't. I'm going to have to take the L on this one and probably wait for and probably do a blind buy and just get it on Blu-ray or something.
Yeah, from everything I can gather, it's probably worth the money. I mean, just resoundingly positive reviews across the board. But number four, I guess that's the only newcomer to the top five, was The Kid Who Would Be King. Number three got Aquaman. I guess the one thing I saw there is I think it passed The Dark Knight Rises for the highest grossing DC movie of all time.
Oh, wow. That's kind of big news. I know Wonder Woman had that record for a little bit, but I mean, this has had crazy legs. I figured it would do some good numbers, but this has just had crazy legs.
Yeah, I think it just really goes to show how popular, you know, Momoa was, his character was in the movie, and how much people wanted to see the spinoff. So glad to see it's doing well, based on how, you know, poorly Justice League did, Batman vs. Superman. It's been a hard road for the DC movies.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more.
Number two, we got The Upside in its third week, which I was kind of surprised to see this one is still in the top five, let alone coming into the second spot.
Yeah, I think it's a realization of both things. It's obviously not a strong offering right now. And, you know, whether you love him or hate him, Kevin Hart has a fan base, and, you know, Bryan Cranston is, he's no scrub. So, you know, I think they're going to bring people to the theaters, and, you know, it's not, everything I hear, it's all right. You know, some people might love it a little more than others, but it's not terrible. It's just a matter of how much, you know, you might laugh or get shaken up. But, yeah, it sounds pretty average to me, all things considered.
Yeah, I'm just kind of glancing at reviews right here. It looks pretty mediocre across the board. I'm guessing the main draw to it was just people curious to see Kevin Hart in a drama.
Yep.
But we'll end with number one. We've got M. Night Shyamalan's Glass, which is repeating for the second straight week. And so this is one that I did get a chance to go see. And as I was telling you beforehand, I almost pulled out at the last second just because I read some reviews before I went to see it. And it was already off to a bad start. But I figured, you know, mainly the critic response, so maybe it's more of an audience pleaser of a movie. But, you know, I gotta say, it did not have the feel I was looking for at all. I think when you look at Split and when you look at Unbreakable, there's almost like a certain, you know, visual, like a gray or blue hue to the film that really sets a somber tone.
Mm-hmm.
And right from the beginning of Glass, that was just missing. So it just didn't feel like it was, you know, part of a trilogy and connected to those movies. They started off, you know, a little goofier with Bruce Willis's character than I would have liked. So it just didn't feel as serious as the other two were, and, you know, as dramatic in a way. But Man, I was really excited for this one based on the trailers that I saw. I thought it was going to be, you know, just a next level of superhero movies and just this really unique spin that Shyamalan was going to put on it. But, yeah, I don't know. I didn't love the story. I think he had trouble balancing all three characters. He had Samuel L. Jackson pretty much just, you know, in like comatose for two-thirds of the movie while his character is playing possum. But you can't put, you know, if you're going to have Samuel L. Jackson in your movie, you got to bring him to life.
Right.
And they just kind of squandered him until the very end. So,
right.
Yeah, and I don't know. Obviously, you're going to expect a big twist at the end, and it felt a little forced and not very creative or well thought out. Mm. So, I think, unfortunately, this, you know, trilogy of sorts is just going to end on a sore note.
Yeah, that's a bummer. You know, I was one of those guys who I really love Split. The last 20 minutes, I didn't love it as much as the rest of the movie, but, you know, I'm not gonna say that 20 minutes changed my opinion of that movie. But you know, regardless, I've seen the trailers too, and Glass looked pretty good. I'm still gonna catch it at some point, but it's just got so many other things going on right now that I've had to put on back burner. But your kind of concerns, I've heard for the most part, some people are in love with the twist. It's, I don't know, it's just not, it doesn't have that, like, staying power that that Split did or Unbreakable. And I've heard the same thing about Samuel L. It's just, you know, he doesn't have anything but a blank face for, like, entire two-thirds of the movie. And then finally some things start to happen. But, yeah, it's unfortunate. The one thing I've heard, though, is, as we can expect, James McAvoy is awesome, and it sounds like he keeps this movie from being like a complete letdown, but it still is kind of a letdown.
Yeah, he's really good, just, you know, bouncing back and forth between the different characters. I think there's very few actors with the depth to pull it off and be as believable as he does. And the transformation he did physically for the Beast is just, you know, flat out impressive. And, man, you know, one thing I thought was really missing, which I kind of harped on in my review of the movie, is What made Split so good for me is the build-up to the climax at the end. I know you you didn't love the last 20 minutes. I actually did kind of like the way they ended it and, you know, this huge reveal that they go through. But it builds up to that point, and there's suspense. You're, you know, on the edge of your chair to an extent, just waiting for this to happen. Right at the beginning of Glass, you see the Beast, so there's just no suspense at all. Which I don't know, just going along with, you know, kind of missing the tone of the previous two movies.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, you know, how I felt about it.
Right. Well, I guess any way you slice it, it's making some money, but I think even the studio themselves, they're a little bit disappointed with the results because they had a really massive second week drop. So, you know, once some more things start coming out next week and the week after that, this probably won't be around for as long as we might think it would have been.
Yeah, I think it'll get run out of the top five pretty darn quick come February.
Yeah.
All right, we'll go and wrap up our box office recap there. Otherwise, I tell you what, let's go ahead and do a real quick run through of next weekend's because not much is coming out. And then I think you and I are going to talk through just some initial thoughts on the Oscars really quick.
Yeah, let's do it.
Coming soon to theaters.
I was looking at a couple movies and yeah, as you said, not a whole bunch coming out, but we do have one compelling movie that I put on as far as things that I'm interested in that's coming out this Friday on Netflix.
Oh, is it Velvet Buzzsaw?
Yep.
That's this Friday?
That's this Friday. It's crazy to think, but we've just about made it through entire month of 2019, and Friday is February 1st.
And it's getting released right to Netflix?
Yeah, unless I'm, not reading something right, but it's getting released to Netflix. It's not, I mean, you might get in some L.A. and New York theaters, but yeah, this is going right to Netflix. February 1st,
man, that
in
is
selected theaters.
Well, I know exactly how I'm spending my Friday night now.
Yeah, me too. Even if I have some massive plans, I want to check this one out. And once I come home from work, might just order something and put that on the old Netflix queue and go from there.
Yeah, man. The first story that pops up for Velvet Buzzsaw is Dan Gilroy's horror satire Kills at Sundance.
Yeah. I mean, and I get a feeling it's probably not going to be a movie for everyone, but, you know, I love Dan Gilroy. I love Nightcrawler. I love Jake Gyllenhaal. Renee Russo's back in it, too. I think that's his wife, but Toni Collette, Daveed Diggs, who did a pretty underrated movie last year, Blindspotting, and John Malkovich. So, I mean, the cast is there. Music, Marco Beltrami is there. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much more I could sell it. I mean, I know it's probably going to be a weird movie, horror-esque. I've heard vibes of The Player, which is a movie I liked from the 90s. But yeah, I mean, any way you cut it, I'm very excited to sit down and watch this movie.
Yeah, I'll be checking this one out for sure. I'm certainly more interested in that than the other big box office release coming up this weekend. But I'm sure those who enjoyed Jane the Virgin will be excited for Miss Bala coming out on Friday with Gina Rodriguez starring. But I don't know. I've watched a few trailers for this. It looks pretty generic.
It does, yeah.
I took a glance on IMDb, and it's already got a terrible score, which is bound to change. I'm sure it'll go up. But how far it'll go up is the real question. I'm guessing not too far. The one thing I was kind of curious about was to see Anthony Mackie's role in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they wrote an intriguing enough role for him as the villain, I'd be more, interested to check it out. But, I don't know. Unless I get some really strong word of mouth, I think I'll be passing on this one.
Yeah, I might go watch it. I might have some time this weekend, and the weather doesn't look too terrible. I'm not going to make any promises, but I may go, make the time to watch it and maybe write about it. But apparently, so this is like it's a remake from a 2011 film having the same name. Miss Bala, short for Miss Bullet, if anyone wanted to know or translated it. But yeah, trailers do look pretty generic. I think it's working with a PG-13 rating, which, it's not a bad thing or a death kill by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, when you kind of think Mexico and you think kind of that whole scene, you kind of expect something gritty. Maybe not Sicario gritty. That's a hell of a level of grit, but at least something where, you know, you can kind of feel the dirtiness and the violence a little bit. I don't know if we're going to get that same thing with the rating. So I'm probably going to check it out, but the trailers do look pretty generic. The song they kind of use as we go into the second half of the trailer seems very, very, I don't know, corny and I don't know, weird tonally. So I'm not expecting too much from it. Maybe there'll be some interesting action scenes, but yeah, not expecting a whole bunch.
Yeah, I mean, when you think of good drug trade movies or, you know, drug trafficking movies, you know, you think of movies like Blow or Traffic or Sicario. And, you know, honestly, to do, you know, the drug trade in Mexico mm-hmm. justice, you have to rate them R.
Yeah.
And so not to say every movie has to be, but in my opinion, you know, to really get your point across, like American Made, another one, a little lighter, still rated R, though.
Right.
So, yeah, the PG-13 also just turns me right off on this one.
Yeah. No.
But, yeah. Otherwise, I don't think anything else big is coming out, right?
No, I think that's about it. All the other films have, like, very, very limited releases. Next, the following week, they'll have 4 new releases. But, yeah, this week is just Miss Battle, and that's it.
Okay. All right. Well, with that, I think we'll go ahead and shift into just some initial thoughts on the Oscar nominations that were just released. I don't know if we're going to do a real deep dive into everything, maybe just touch on a few of the bigger categories.
Right.
But I don't know. I kind of wrote down like a few random thoughts that I had based on some of the nominations that I saw. So we'll touch on that as well. But Mark, I mean, with that, man, you've done a much better job of keeping up with the Oscar releases this year. So if you want to take the lead here, by all means.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll do my best here. You know, 8 movies were nominated. I've seen all of them except for The Favorite. Still holding out hope that I can see it before the Oscars air on February 24th, if I got that date correctly. But, yeah, I've seen them all. And, I mean, we start right with Best Picture. You know, we've got Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, Green Book, Roma, Star is Born, and Vice. You know, how many of those have you seen, John? Or, you know, are there any of those ones that, you know, you'd feel really good about in winning a Best Picture?
So let's see. I've seen Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, and A Star is Born.
Okay.
My personal thought is, based on what you have told me and based on the reception that Roma received at the Golden Globes,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to guess that's probably The Favorite at this point.
I have not looked at, like, betting odds. I'm not huge all the way into that. I understand them on a base level, but, you know, I don't look at them a ton. If I have this right, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but last time I've heard and I've kind of listened around, Roma and Green Book are like the big favorites right now to take home this award. My gut actually says that I think Green Book has a pretty good chance of winning this. I've seen it. Green Book, it's a fine movie. You know, we've got some really good central performances from Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali. The movie itself, though, it's very flimsy, and I can see where people get mad at it. I kind of just checked out after about 15, 20 minutes and not checked out from me not paying attention to the movie. But I just realized, like, this is not a deep dive movie. It's just a movie that is going to make people feel good. It was released during the holidays. So, you know, it's something you could take, you know, all members of family to and, you know, get a really warm feeling about. But it's not a movie that's really going to make you think too much or even maybe do its, like, core stars, its, you know, actual people justice. So, it's fine. You know, I would be disappointed if it won Best Picture, but I do think that it might be The Favorite right now, and it did win, you know, at the Golden Globes.
Yeah. I mean, based on what I've seen, and obviously I've only seen half of them, but I mean, my personal pick would be A Star is Born,
yeah,
because I think that was my kind of obsession movie of
2018.
Mm-hmm. I thought Cooper pieced that movie together to near perfection. But and I guess the one thing I was glad to see, you know, Black Panther get up there, just to, you know, finally get a superhero movie with a nomination. A few thoughts on that were, you know, it was kind of a toss up this year. I feel like it could have been Black Panther, Spider-Man, or Avengers. You know, great year for actually good superhero movies.
Yep.
But the fact that Black Panther was the first just kind of reminded me that The Dark Knight never got any love, and I was just like baffled that that movie didn't get a nomination.
Yeah, it still kicks people to this day. And a lot of people, they'll say that's the reason why, you know, they have more than five slots now for Best Picture, which in some ways gives more recognition to movies that maybe might have not gotten it before, but in other ways it really doesn't improve their odds by any means, because now you have eight movies to spread votes over as opposed to just five or a max of 10. But most times usually you see it taper out around eight or nine. But I mean, it kind of did two things by people not honoring the Black or the Dark Knight. But it's good to see Black Panther here. I don't think it'll win, nor do I necessarily want it to win, though. I mean, it is a really good kind of thought provoking movie in a lot of ways. But I'm happy it's here.
Yeah, I think it's a step in the right direction, hopefully.
I got to say, though, the biggest shock is still, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody. I did see it right before Christmas, and, you know, it's fine. It's not really my movie. I'm not going to say it's terrible, but I'm still kind of flabbergasted that it ended the Golden Globes, you know, winning, like, I think it was Best Drama. It wasn't even just Best Musical. It won Best Drama. So I am very surprised that it's still, you know, sitting here. But as soon as they won that, I figured it was going to get a nomination for Best Picture.
Yeah, I'm just floored that this movie is nominated. And, you know, I guess on this note, if could we just transition
Absolutely.
To Best Actor
Absolutely.
While we're at
yeah.
it? Because if Rami Malek beats out Bradley Cooper...
Mm-hmm.
for Best Actor in a Leading Role, I might have a stroke. and it's not even that I think like Cooper should win. I haven't seen Vice, and I've heard that Christian Bale is the favorite to, you know, pull in that category.
Yeah.
But if Rami Malek wins it, I'm just going to be beside myself.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I say this as a guy who really loves Rami Malek. I love his work in Mr. Robot. I think he's a very talented actor who, once that show's over, he's going to do a lot of different things, and I think he'll excel in a lot of them. But, you know, it feels very, very early for him maybe to win this type of award, and I just think, you know, compared to other people in this category, I would lean towards Christian Bale, followed probably by Bradley Cooper. I've not gotten to Willem Dafoe's work. I'm sure he's really good. Vincent Van Gogh. And you know, Viggo Mortensen is awesome. Maybe not best actor awesome, but he is awesome. But I would be very disappointed too if Raimi won this award. I just don't think it's a good performance, and I think in a lot of ways it kind of keeps the movie at least all right, but it's just not something that I would want to see win for best actor.
Yeah, and I don't mean to disparage
right.
his performance, because he definitely does a good job portraying Freddie Mercury. But when you have kind of a unique year with two actors portraying, you know, lead musicians and kind of the struggles they went through,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that one of them was actually singing their own songs, it's just a no-brainer in my mind.
Yeah.
So.
And I guess the only snub that I was kind of disappointed with was no Ethan Hawke for First Reformed. I thought he was brilliant in that movie. You know, from start to finish. And I figured maybe it was going to be like the only, they got a nod for like best screenplay, but I thought that and Hawk would have been like the only nomination would have got. So I'm bummed that he didn't get recognition. He probably wouldn't have won, but it would have been nice to see him get recognized.
Yeah, I'm a big Ethan Hawk guy. I'd probably need to check out First Reform, but I mean, even if you look at just, you know, for instance, Sinister, you know, a horror movie he was in. His performance is unbelievable in that.
Yeah, I mean, he can do a lot,
Yeah, I'd like to see him get a little more love. But, yeah, I guess with that, we'll go ahead and jump into supporting actors. So what are you thinking here?
It's a pretty solid category. Mahershala Ali won the Golden Globe for his portrayal of Don Shirley. I would probably paint him as a favorite right now. I like that Sam Elliott, who didn't get recognized at the Golden Globes, did get a nomination for his work in A Star Is Born. Richard E. Grant is really, really good in Can You Ever Forgive Me? He and Melissa McCarthy, who also got a nomination for Best Actress, we'll get to that in a little bit, but their relationship really does kind of carry the movie. They're very much kind of two, like, bad or kind of tough people to love, but they just kind of grow on you after a little while. He's great in that movie. And Sam Rockwell, I'm kind of surprised that he got the nomination here. I actually think that Steve Carell did a better job in the movie than Rockwell. Not to say Rockwell is bad, but his performance is kind of Saturday Night Live-esque as George W. Bush. It's it's good, but it's I would have went with Carell if I was going to pick another actor, supporting actor from that movie.
Oh, that's sad to hear, because I was hoping Carell was going to get a nomination this year with all the movies he had coming out.
He did. It's just, you know, this the movies he came out, this one was probably the best one. But even then, it's kind of divisive. Some people have really taken advice. Other people, it's like, I don't know what McKay was going for. He did a lot of different things in the movie. The directing's kind of all over the place. And, you know, it's like he doesn't dig as deep, in my opinion, as he did with A Big Short, or the Big Short. So, yeah, but it's a bummer for Carell because he came out with three kind of Oscar heavier specific movies. You did Welcome to Marwen, and by all accounts, that was just bizarre.
Christ.
And he did Beautiful Boy, which isn't a bad movie. It's just, it's not the movie that was going to get him recognized either, along with Timothée Chalamet. So, yeah. Well, I am kind of bummed out for Carell, but he'll be back. I think, you know, I don't know what he's got down the pipeline, but, you know, it won't be the last to see him at the Oscars, I imagine.
Yeah, I think he'll be back for more.
My gut says Mahershala Ali, but I could see maybe Sam Elliott getting some momentum, though it kind of seems like a lot of A Star Is Born's momentum has stalled in a lot of areas. But I could see my gut says Ali, but I would say maybe Elliott as a second. I can't see Adam Driver winning, though I love what he did in Black Klansman.
Yeah, he was so good at that the part where they're doing the lie detector test.
Yeah, that was very intense. I mean, I knew nothing was going to happen, but it's the way he sells it and the way he's shot. It's it was one of those scenes that was unforgettable from last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, Elliot, I could see him sneaking it out. I think the Academy has a tendency to give aging actors Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. I want to say John Wayne won for True Grit. Paul Newman won for The Color of Money. You know, both guys that were nearing the end of their careers. And then maybe even Christopher Plummer won an Oscar not too long ago. But I think to your point, I think Ali is definitely the favorite. Yeah. But, you know, you never know.
You don't.
And what are we thinking on actresses?
So this was a very, very deep field. If I were to, like, name off all the people that would be, you know, consider, I'd say the pool was at least about 15 or 20 deep. You know, some of those movies are better than others, but that's a long way of me saying that the best actress field is very stacked. You know, I have not seen The Favourite, so I already talked about that, but I've seen everything else. I really, really enjoy Glenn Close in The Wife. I wrote about that movie on thatmoment.com. It is her movie, and she does a lot within it. So she actually won, which is a surprise to a lot of people, she won Best Actress at the Golden Globes. I think it's just a surprise to a lot of not a lot of people have seen it. But if she wins, I'm all for it. Gaga was really good in her kind of debut. It just doesn't seem like the momentum is there again for her to take this award. Melissa McCarthy, really like her first full-on dramatic role. She gets the opportunity to be comedic and, you know, really biting and whatnot. But, you know, she's delivering a lot of drama. She does it really, really well. It's good to see her here. And I saw Yalitza Aparicio in Roma. I think she's great. But if I had to remove one piece from this, one person from this category, it'd probably be her. I just don't think she has as much of the heavy lifting as some of these other actresses do have in this category.
Yeah, I mean, man, when you list them off, God, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if any of them won.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of, I do think it's wide open. For some reason, though, I'm pretty sure Glenn Close has won. Yeah, she's won, but it feels like it's been a long time since she's won one, so I don't know. It might be coming back to that piece where maybe they honor someone a little older. So I could see my whole gun in my head. I'm gonna say Glenn Close wins this award.
Did she win for the Butler a few years ago?
Oh, that is a good question. Man, I'm looking this up right now, but I think you might be right. I think she did win for the Butler. Let's see here. Film and television. I'm sorry, guys. Looking this up right now. She's never won, actually. So it would be her first win.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. She's been nominated 6 times. One of them for Fatal Attraction in 1987, but she's never won. So maybe this is the year.
Yeah, I think that probably bolsters her chances even.
Right.
If she's never, I mean, she's getting up there a little bit in age, so.
Yep.
All right, well, I would definitely list her as the favorite with probably Lady Gaga not too far behind.
Yeah. I'm with you. I broke Close 1, Gaga 2. McCarthy 3, but then again, I still haven't seen the favorite. I've heard Olivia Colman did win her award, so, you know, she's obviously really, really good in that movie. But I would say, yeah, Close and Gaga are 1 and 2 in my book.
Did I make up the movie The Butler?
No.
I was thinking of Albert Nobbs.
Maybe you're thinking, well, Lee Daniels did the movie.
Oh.
So that's my opinion.
Yeah,
thinking
okay.
Of.
I was, all right. I was thinking of her role in Albert Nobbs, and I said The Butler for some reason. So. Apologies.
That's okay. That's okay. But that movie did get nominated, I think, for an Oscar. So you weren't too far away, but yeah.
All right. Well, moving on. all right, last but not least, actress in a supporting role, of which I've seen none of these movies, so I don't really have a ton of input.
I think the main takeaway at this one is you've got two actresses from the same movie, Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz. You know, The Favourite is very much a female-driven movie, but when you have two actresses in the same category, common logic says they're probably going to cancel each other out. So you really look towards Marina de Tavira for Roma, Regina King, and Amy Adams. Regina King won the Golden Globe, and I feel like I've said this a lot of times, but I would probably lean towards her. She's really good in that. She is awesome in that movie. The movie itself, it's directed by Barry Jenkins, who did Moonlight, which probably was my favorite movie of 2016. I have to double-check again, but in my opinion, that movie's not as strong as Beale Street Could Talk as Moonlight is, but she is probably the best part of it, and it still is a very good-looking movie. You know, it hit for a lot of different people, but I think this is the one place that it has a good shot of winning an award, because I think outside of this and maybe like two other categories, it really didn't get a lot of love at the Oscars.
No, it really didn't, but yeah, based on everything you're saying, I feel like you're definitely spot on there with her probably being the favorite.
And I mean, I can see Adams winning, but I feel like I should know this a lot more. But I guess she's never won either, Amy Adams, for for anything at the Oscars. So it wouldn't shock me if she won either. And you know, her playing off Bale is kind of hilarious and kind of dark at times. But I don't know. It's her you know, Dick Cheney's wife, I just don't see that as, like, this is an award-winning performance, you know?
Yeah, I think if she were to win, that would be a little out of left field.
I think it would be, you know, I wouldn't be necessarily shocked, but I would probably lean towards Regina King.
God, Amy Adams has been up for 6 Oscars.
She has, and I feel like a lot of those
Good
have come
Lord.
In really within this decade. You look at The Fighter, The Master, American Hustle, and Vice. So, I mean, this decade has really kept her busy as regards to, like, Best Supporting Actress. Or Best Actress,
yeah, no
but,
kidding.
Yeah.
There's a lot of repeat names happening, man.
There are.
But, all right, well, I think the last one we've got, then, is directing. And I've again, going in a little blind, I've got to guess it's going to be Roma, Alfonso Cuarón.
If I had to bet my life on one category and one person, it would probably be Alfonso Cuarón for Roma. I think it's a very, very, very good movie. Not my favorite movie of the year or my favorite movie in the Best Picture list, but direction, I do think it's immaculately directed. And I don't believe any of these other directors who all have done good things in their own right. I've seen a little bit of Cold War. I saw Black Klansman. I would put that in there as best director. I've seen McKay for Vice. Backtracking, I don't think he should have got a nomination for that. That movie is kind of spliced and cut, and it does a lot of different things that I'm just not a fan of. But, you know, to each his own. But, yeah, I don't see how Cuarón loses this category.
Yeah, I will say, with your point on Vice, again, I haven't seen the movie, but it got, you know, not great reviews. I think people just thought it was weird and didn't love what McKay did with it, his messaging. Mm-hmm. And for that to get in over A Star Is Born, just,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, that's a movie that should have been there. I would probably have that replace Vice. You know, I'm trying to think of what else that's really kind of stuck with me as far as like a direction goes. But that Star Is Born stands out for sure. I didn't love the editing of Star Is Born, but the direction itself, I mean, you can have a great direct movie without like immaculate editing. And I think Bradley Cooper done that. I mean, just the way he sets up, you know, shots, and he actually made a larger life feel of people who were pretty fictional. I think that's something you can't forget in that movie. But yeah, I mean, there's probably at least three other movies that I would put over Vice in regards to best director. And I even said the same thing about The Big Short when it came out a couple years ago, which I love that movie a lot, but I do think that at times that the directing is a little haphazard and the editing is kind of all over the place. It doesn't mar the movie necessarily, but for it to get nominated for Best Director, I don't get that one. So it's a little disappointing that his name did show up in Best Director, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think the Academy's been a little overly favorable to McKay the last few years.
Yeah, absolutely. So... yeah, I don't see any of these other directors, you know, mounting a legitimate challenge to Roma and Cuarón. So that's my take, at least.
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely spot on there. So, well, with that, Mark, I think we can probably kind of wrap things up here. Should we expect anything from you on thatmomentin.com this week?
Yeah, I'm going to get to something. I don't know if we have decided on who, if anyone's, I mean, someone will cover Velvet Buzzsaw. I don't know if it'll be like Vern or maybe it'll be David, but I feel like one of us four will probably cover it. All of us, I'm sure, will watch it, though. It's just a matter of who will cover it. But yeah, I'm going to try my darndest to get to Miss Vala and hopefully have something. If not by the time we do this next week, then early that week. So, you know, as long as the weather is not too bad, I'm going to try to get to Miss Vala.
All right, sounds good. Well, I think at the very least we'll be able to recap Velvet Buzzsaw next week.
Yep.
But yeah, I might try to get a piece over to David, just kind of, you know, recapping a few random thoughts about the Oscars this year. But yeah, otherwise, just hop on there and check out my What to Watch for February. And with that, we'll catch you on Cinema Recap next week.
All right, guys.
Cinema Recap is a proud member of That Moment In Podcast Network. Find all your favorite shows over on the site thatmomentin.com. We are available on iTunes, Spotify, Player FM, Radio Public, Stitcher, Podomatic, everywhere. Just search That Moment In. Thank you all for listening.